listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
To episode 188 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid.
We didn't mention it last week, but the Bioshock thing is still happening. Whether or not it ends up being episode 190, I suddenly started playing Bioshock 1 today. I'm purposely playing it on easy just so that I can get through it quickly so that I can at least comment on story and characterization and plot if, you know, not obviously I'm being pinned everywhere by enemies kind of levels of gameplay.
Cool.
Yeah. But that is going to happen. We've changed setup a little this week after what happened last week, and we're sorry about the audio quality in the previous episode. We were on Google Hangouts after Skype had been terrible previously last year, and now we've gone back to Skype. So it's going to be interesting to see how things go. And also, we found out last week that our email address was no longer working. I talked to the people that deal with our email, and it's now working. So if for some obscene reason in this day and age you want to email, if you want to email us, it's obscene. There's other technology these days.
Please do not say email and obscene in the same set.
Yeah,
that'll go wrong. That'll go horribly, horribly wrong.
Save obscene emails for the after dark.
Yes, but if you want to just send us sane, nice emails, you can do. Oh, not so nice. No, just some nice ones. you can do so at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. I was also reminded of the fact though that we're actually available on Pocket Casts. I'd forgotten because there are so many podcasting services. That I was like, we are on Pocket Casts, which is also available on Android and iOS. So if you're looking for an alternative to Stitcher. And obviously, flipping iTunes. Pocket Cast is on Android and iOS and desktop in browser. So,
well, I mean, anything that can pick up RSS ones as well.
Because somebody asked me.
Because the one that I use is Podcast Addict.
Somebody was asking around on Twitter last week, was like, oh, does anyone actually use RSS anymore? And I was like, all podcasts are freaking based off of RSS. It's like the main distribution for it. Might be the only thing seriously using RSS now. It's hardly anyone enables it for their blogs and websites.
It's kind of good for automation, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, there's a few smaller things that use RSS just because it's, you know, very compressed, you know, very short information bursts. And it's convenient.
Because, I mean, when you do a podcast, you don't want to be like signed up to 50 different services and having to publish on every single one of them in order to try and get your podcast out.
But, yeah, so I explained some. No, RSS is still used as a thing, at least in certain situations. This week we were going to talk about the Nintendo Switch and what we've been up to. We previously talked about the Nintendo Switch after the initial announcement.
The Nintendo.
And then there was that 4 a.m. thing last week.
Did you stay up to watch it?
No.
No. But I mean, the 4 a.m. thing kind of makes sense considering it was a global event, so somewhere in the world it had to be stupid in the morning.
Well, they did follow up with another press launch in London as well, didn't they?
And New York and stuff.
There was one in London, yeah.
Yeah, but the, like, because there was the live big ass presentation that was obviously in Japan, and like 4 a.m. here is like normal time of the day in Japan, an unsociable hour, even more. Is that an unsociable hour for the East Coast America? Midnight.
Midnight.
Yeah, and then on West Coast it's fine because it's like just the middle of the evening. But
I'm surprised they didn't just do a Nintendo Direct because I quite like the Nintendo Direct.
I do too as well, but I don't know.
Have they been doing them since Thingy passed away?
I think they have. Yeah.
Maybe that was kind of his.
Yeah.
Thing. So yes, a Nintendo Switch. There has been an interesting. Oh, I'm after the second round of information. I am less smitten with it than I was previously.
Sorry, Paul.
I don't give a shit. I'm still going to get it.
Is it? Do I have to at this point, or is it just, you know, taken as read?
As far as I'm concerned, you know, people can slag it off however much they like. In the end, if I like the look of something, I'm going to get it. Fuck everybody else.
So you've pre-ordered then?
I haven't pre-ordered, no.
No, he hasn't pre-ordered it.
But I mean, considering I work for a retailer that would sell it, I find it better to get a staff discount on it. Which I can't, but, you know, I don't think I can pre-order it and still get a staff discount. So I'll just wait till it's out. Hopefully it won't be like the Wii and kind of sell out instantly and you won't be able to get one for 6 months. But at least if it does, then it'll be out in time for, you know, some of the like Mario games and stuff.
But the way that Nintendo's going at the moment with how it's conceptualized and stuff, I don't think they're going to see a Wii situation anytime soon, the way they're doing stuff.
Yeah. Are you hoping for a bundle to be released as well?
It would make sense for a bundle to be released because, I mean, I don't think any console that Nintendo's done, apart from like the handhelds, obviously, has been like just by itself.
Apart from the N64 in its first release, right?
And I think the GameCube. I don't think the GameCube came with anything to start off with.
That was one of the reasons it flopped.
Actually, I think you're right on the GameCube. I think I must have got the GoldenEye pack.
Yeah, that came
so
out.
It might be like it's a different SKU, in essence. Yeah. But, yeah.
Retroid, you must have the technical specs ingrained into your eyeballs at this point. Can you give us like a slight run-by of what the Switch is meant to be running on and capable of, if possible?
Well, it's based on an NVIDIA-based ARM system on chip. It's similar. It's extraordinarily similar to the NVIDIA Shield tablet that they released, and everyone said.
I wanted to get the NVIDIA Shield, not for myself, but we were looking for a tablet for one of my aunts. And then when we actually finally went to look for an NVIDIA Shield, nobody was selling them anymore.
Yeah, it didn't do well.
Yeah.
No.
The actual shield with it looks like this. It looks like an Xbox 360 controller with a flip screen. That's what that looked like. But this was based on a different beast.
Mm.
I think it's the X1, which was like it looked like a slightly weird angular tablet, but without a tablet screen. And the idea was you would plug it into your TV and it would be quite nice and it would, you know, play, you know, lots of, you know, the standard Android stuff, but, you know, with all the settings ramped up to 1080p, blah, 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 video on demand, all that thing, and not take up much juice. So, it's based on a version of that, which is very nice. It's very nice for a portable, you know, system on chip. I've also heard that the actual screen, because it's like something like a 6.1 inch screen around the bottom on the Switch, that's 720p, but it's a slightly better DPI than the PlayStation Vita.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
So, and the PlayStation Vita screen is one of the most gorgeous things I've used.
Mm.
It's very nice, very sharp, very, nicely detailed. So I see no issue with it being 720p on that, on that screen. No problem whatsoever with that. The idea is that when you're using it as a portable and it's running on its own screen, etc., of course, it has to run that screen off its battery.
Yeah.
But because it's running at, 720 and not 1080p, which you can do on a full TV display, they can afford to ramp the power down on, the frequencies for the GPU and the CPU cores, which means that it should manage. But we're hearing talk of about 2.5 to 6 hours when using the handheld.
Depends on the game, doesn't it? They said it was about 3 hours on Zelda because of how much it displays on the screen. And that party game
Well, I mean, presumably it's not just how much it displays on screen, it's also the processing power, and presumably, yeah, you know, what kind of inputs that it takes at the time. So, I mean, I'd imagine some games wouldn't need stuff like accelerometers. Accelerometers. That's the one. So obviously they can probably turn that off and save power that way. And
also, the level of connectivity that the game may need to the internet. Yeah. Whenever you got like adaptive Wi-Fi and like LAN and stuff involved, like that starts to eat power.
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm out and about and I don't, you know, I don't have any Wi-Fi networks to connect to, and my power is draining quite rapidly, I will turn my Wi-Fi off because it saves a bit of power. So presumably it'll be the same with the Switch.
Yeah, I can see the whole argument that if you're using 3D graphics, if you're, you know, Zeldering, then yeah, it's going to require more grunt, and that will run the battery down faster. But if you're using simpler things, then yeah, it's going to be a lot a lot longer on there. But yeah, spec wise, it's a very respectable. The way some people have, approached it, I'm approaching it, from the Japanese view, which is the Japanese home market is very portable based.
Yes.
So I'm not looking at it as a replacement to the Wii U. I am looking at it as a new experimental portable system which happens to be able to plug into TVs. And I think from that perspective, it makes a lot more sense.
Hmm. So I quite like the concept behind it.
I like the concept. My issues are with lack of games and price at the moment.
I mean, price is a bit of a dubious one because, I mean, it's not going to be £300. And obviously, say for example, PlayStation's VR headset is £350. Mentioning the fact that you need the. So I think it is relatively competitively priced, maybe a little bit, over the edge, but it is still, within reason, as it were.
I don't think it's fair to compare it to the PlayStation VR. If you're comparing it to PS4 and Xbox One, which, by all accounts, it is not as powerful as.
Yeah, but by the same token, it's a handheld console as well, so you can't really do a straightforward comparison.
Yeah, but then you can't. But then they are almost doing a straightforward comparison with the prices of the games.
Yes, you're talking $60 for these games.
That's because the games are pretty much comparable to console ones.
Yeah, but you can't compare in one market and then compare in the other.
Why not? It competes as, a standalone console with, basically it's got the power of a console in essence, whether it's out and about or not. So the games have to match that, but the system itself doesn't.
The system itself
requires more things to it to actually make it portable.
What example is a news item I heard today, which was, I don't give a shit about the game, but, for a variety of reasons, but the Switch version of FIFA is going... Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yes, that's EA's, full support behind it. FIFA, right.
Yeah, but that's going to be based on 360 and PS3 versions. And, to which everyone says, there are still 360 and PS3 versions, and to which I say, so long as they can make a book out of it, of course there's going to be. They just upgrade the, the rosters and.
In the end, that's more EA being lazy.
I actually thought last year's FIFA was the last one for the 360 and PS3.
I have no idea, and I don't care. But that's just an example of something I've heard, which was just really. I thought it would be. Yeah.
Well, it would make more financial sense to basically just release pretty much like the same game on the console rather than having like an upgraded version, which then you have to spend to actually downgrade it.
I think the thing is, though, is that with the Switch, if one were to compare on a processing power to cost ratio, it's not a good situation in comparison to like a PS4 and Xbox One. But
yeah,
also...
That's basically my issue, and why I've said I'm looking at it from the perspective of it's a hugely expensive portable.
And also the fact is that it seems to, I mean, what the hell's going on with its social functionality? There doesn't seem to be anything on the console. You've got to use a separate mobile device.
So apparently, no, I think that's a separate social media like use. Facebook and Twitter, aren't they?
It's looking like it's got less.
Because there's a share function on it, which, you know,
yeah,
pretty much
like the PS4,
now.
So you can go to Facebook.
So,
did anyone? Oh, shall we talk about their online offering?
Please.
What are you going to be charging for in September?
Oh, not just that, but what it's going to offer.
But they didn't announce anything, did they?
It's information on the internet that that they're basically going to allow you to have either a NES or SNES game for free for that month.
Yeah, it's basically they are charging you rental for a 20, 30-year-old game for that month. And then, I mean, if you want to continue playing it, you have to buy it.
But, I mean, the question is, though, I mean, because that wouldn't necessarily be an issue if, say, for example, it was like, I don't know, maybe £2 or £3 a month. You know.
Yeah, we don't know the price yet. And
seeing as
it's Nintendo...
It's not going to be a great price.
So is that going to be the main... That can't be just the main thing of it, though.
Oh, no. You get online play and you get...
Do you get online play without the subscription thing?
After the initial period, no.
Oh,
bear in mind that that's online, not LAN.
Their approach to voice chat. Did anyone notice that?
Well, because I've heard about the app that you download to, you know, can do that kind of thing with. But I don't know, because it's still got like a headphone jack, so I'm not sure whether they'd be able to do it like on console as well, or, you know.
I think it's very much a smartphone.
That's right. I saw something about a smartphone app being developed for messaging and stuff.
Yeah. How about you do it on the fucking console?
Which is what you get included with the price with the Xbox One and the PS4.
Yeah, and then you can download the app free of charge, so you can use the keyboard on your phone at the same time if you want to.
Using an app to do voice chat with your friends on a phone or a tablet is something that you do if the machine itself doesn't offer it. I find it a little bit weird that they're offering, you know, they've said that there will be an app for this.
It depends, because, I mean...
Well, the thing is, they're dealing with tablet technology that's already going to be overclocking itself in order to play decent games of a decent quality. What if there's not the capacity to then run voice chat at the same time? Is that going on? Because I'm not sure if anyone else has ever noticed when trying to use tablets for gaming, but they don't multitask very well as soon as you've got a game running on it.
So maybe it's for performance issues.
You know, how the software is set up. I will say, as an example, going back in console, you know, because it's always better to look at, you know, how other consoles have done this in the past. Now, when it came to online functionality, the original Xbox did it on a per game basis. Each game had to be patched, it had to be changed to have the Xbox Live functionality. You know, how to do it. You know, that's why you got some games that offered voice chat and, you know, party system, and some games didn't. When it came to the 360, one of the things that they did so well with the 360 was the entire operating system for the console fitted in 32 meg of RAM. That included VoIP.
Nice.
So that's why when you were running on the 360, if you pressed the guide button, you could chat. You could talk to a friend.
You were in a party.
While you're on the they added parties, you know, the party system later on. But yeah, it's, you know, they added all that. They managed to patch that into a very small space. So, you know, on the 360, if you were having a technical issue with the game, you could talk to your friend while you're looking on the dashboard and then say, how about we play this instead? Hang on, I'll go get the disc, put the disc in, disc would boot, blah, blah, blah. You could still be talking away. So it was like, you know, a multitasking, extraordinarily small, very well engineered, to give them the credit there. in a solution, which meant that it was fairly seamless, and that's why, you know, when there would be a system update on the 360, all games would be able to benefit from them because they didn't need to be separately patched for it. So you've already got the system that, and then of course, you know, when the PS3 decided to do it, they had to play catch up.
Yes.
And, you know, so of course, you know, the PS4 came along, and, you know, the Xbox One, and they were all kind of reinventing the wheel a little bit, especially in, the Xbox One in comparison with the 360. They had a completely different approach, and they fell on their ass with that, but, you know, that's by the by.
So, will the Switch support parties, or is it just one-on-one voice chat?
I don't know if we know that yet.
No, I think the only thing about voice chat that we've heard really is from that app, and there hasn't been much detail into that particular app.
I mean, I can see why. I'm sure their logic will be they want full control of who people can talk to prevent anything dodgy from happening. They want to be able to say that, you know, it's safe.
I'm not entirely sure whether that's necessarily the case. I mean, you know, kids kind of swap phone numbers, you know, like anything. That's how you get cyberbullying from happening. So if they were to turn around and say, right, well, we're not allowing that kind of thing on the app, then...
Yeah, but they've been historically, like, doing stuff... I mean, the reason friend codes exist is to make it harder for kids to get connected to random strangers.
Yeah.
So
it's a very, very Nintendo approach to anything like this. They want to be able to say they have full control. So, of course, the great thing is with the Nintendo app is that you'll be able to talk to only the people that you know, but then you'll still be able to continue to be cyberbullied on every other social media system known because you're using either phone or tablet.
To be fair, though, I mean, because, you know, obviously... You know, kids need parental controls and whatnot. Have you seen the video for the parental control app for Nintendo?
No, I haven't.
that's actually quite interesting because it basically allows you to kind of use the console as you would ordinarily, but it actually sends kind of information to like the parent phone, you know, detailing stuff like how long they've been spending on each game, how long in total have been, you know, whatnot, and allows them to kind of set kind of timers for, you know, how long they're allowed to spend on games and whatnot. So presumably that the information of what they're going to be talking, maybe what they're talking about or who they're contacting, will be also sent to the parent as well.
Well, that would make sense.
That's actually a pretty cool idea.
The thing is, didn't the Wii do that, more or less?
Did the Wii do that?
Yeah, no, we had a play history thing where we
had a play in history, but that, does that necessarily kind of exactly equate to... Sure
you could lock it down. So you could say so many hours a day. I could be wrong on that. I could very easily be wrong. But I remember, that the Wii did have a, you know, you played such a game for like 30 minutes or, you know, 2 hours. And I'm almost certain that you could set it so that you could only have so much playtime.
It did have parental controls, definitely.
Can we talk about how the console seems to be a solution to a Japanese problem that is then trying to be sold to a wider market as well, which doesn't necessarily have the same problem? i.e. console market in Japan's kind of tanking.
That was kind of where I was, you know, going from with the you know, this is precisely what it is. It's a handheld. I get the feeling that they're wanting to, you know, because the home console market has always been a little bit flaky. You look at the, you know, the top 20 and the top 50 for games in Japan, and most of them are portable.
Yeah.
There are a few notable examples that, you know, managed to squeeze through, like Final Fantasy and such. But, you know, that's always been pretty much what we'll go and buy. You know, they'll buy a console so they can, you know, play the latest in a series that they really like. But by and large, you look at the, you know, them and their 3DS, and as an example of how different the market is, the Vita is still very well supported and successful in Japan.
Yeah.
That must be really frustrating for Sony.
Must be really frustrating for, you know, Westerners that, do actually want support for their Vita.
I like my Vita. I cuddle my Vita. It is, granted, it's my Gravity Wars, Geometry Wars 3 and TXK player. But it's a lovely little machine, and I wish it had seen more success.
Mm.
Yeah.
I actually had a lot of fun playing Minecraft on it.
Yeah, it's a nice little machine. And I think the Switch is... It's kind of what they were wanting to do with the Wii U, but they were tethered.
Hmm. It does feel like it's Wii U untethered.
I get the feeling... I'm getting a really big Wii U Plus vibe from it, as in, this is what we were wanting to do all the bloody time, but we had to have a big box under the telly and we couldn't quite explain that to anyone.
Any sort of I would say concluding thoughts, because the thing isn't out yet, but any kind of ending thoughts to this part of the discussion?
Well, I mean,
Closing statements.
I think obviously when the first trailer came out.
Prosecution and defense.
I think when the first trailer came out, you know, people were excited for the possibilities of it. You know, Skyrim on the move, and we are actually getting a Skyrim for it, which is, you know, fantastic. I think
that would be $60.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where you buy it, obviously, but it will be up to $60 or £60. It is a full priced game. What did you expect? Did you expect the price to be kind of lower because it's been out on other consoles first?
I expect it to come down in price faster.
Chances are it will come down in price. I mean, much like Mass Effect 3 did for the Wii U.
I was thinking that because, people were saying about third-party support.
So, yeah.
No, let's just remember that you had Batman Arkham, was it Arkham City?
Arkham City, which was great on it, actually.
Yeah.
It worked really well.
So, you know, you had those, and, you know, those were, you know, like, you know, stabs at, you know, here's something which was previously released, we've slightly polished it. We've added one or two things, and we'll see how it goes. But, of course, most people were, I've just finished that. And it was half the price when I bought it.
Mm.
Mind you, I do think Skyrim is in a better position.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That. So,
I mean,
yeah.
I have looked, obviously, online for loads of different stuff to do with the Nintendo Switch. And supposedly, the Skyrim version that's running on the Switch is closer towards the remastered version than it is the original version. Supposedly.
I thought it was the remastered version. Full stop.
It's very possible. I mean, it was kind of hard to tell. From like poor screenshots of YouTube, exactly.
Yeah, you need to go in, you know, specific areas and get, you know, specific effects going able to say, this is the remaster, because I've suddenly got, you know, I've been blinded by god rays coming from the trees, or, you know, something like that, or, you know, there's weird fog going on. So, this is the remaster.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I think Nintendo always suffers when they kind of do this kind of initial kind of almost pitch to the public, like they did with the Wii, where it's like, oh, motion controls. They haven't outright kind of turned around and said there's any particular games, and people's imagination runs wild with the possibilities. And then the first lot of kind of footage comes out, and it's like, okay, well, the technical limitations kind of setting in, and, you know, the market limitations are setting in, and all of a sudden, you know, you have Nintendo kind of having their real console competing with what was in your head when the trailer first aired. And I think that's what's kind of going on now, you know.
But to be honest with that, it looks better than my imagination was giving it credit for.
Okay. So you're...
I will say, in my defence, I'm not pissing on Nintendo, although I'm sure it often seems like I am. but when it comes to handheld systems, Nintendo have always gone lower spec, lower tech.
Lower tech, but more options. Oh, you're fine. Because, I mean, Nintendo were the first ones to kind of include stuff like, you know, Rumble and, you know, motion controls. And I mean, when I say the first, I mean like the first to kind of popularize it and set it as a standard for, like, you know, a console controller, as it were.
I'm going to say something here, and it's up to you whether you take it as a compliment or not to Nintendo. Oh, yeah. they are... Nintendo are the Apple of gaming.
Yes.
They may not be the first to do something. They may not be the best with the tech, but they seem to have a knack of managing to, you know, refine.
Generally underpowered and closed off. I kind of would agree with that, but I still prefer Nintendo over Apple any day.
Shall we take this to the public? The public came at us with some thoughts on the Switch.
Before we do, can we talk about the Joy-Con controllers slightly? Because I know people were up in arms about that earlier on.
Well, and the charging situation.
The charging situation, yeah. The fact that it's the Joy-Con controller comes with it.
In which case do you mean charging?
But I mean, yeah, the controller kind of connection thing that goes between the two Joy-Cons, that is not meant to be chargeable, or, you know, you cannot charge your Joy-Con controllers through it. And to a certain extent, I know this is a very, very unpopular opinion, and I was thinking about this earlier, but it kind of makes sense. It reduces a certain amount of cost to the console itself on launch. And considering the actual console physically can last only up to 6 hours, whereas the joypad, the Joy-Cons, they have a battery life of about 20 hours. I don't think it would necessarily be a problem, because you're either kind of playing it on the console itself, in which case, after 20 hours, yes, you may get a bit fatigued and your battery may die, but you've been playing for... games console for 20 hours, you take it off and, you know, you kind of go out and about with it, and the console itself only lasts a maximum of 6 hours, so that 20 hours kind of still kind of doesn't necessarily, you know, the only way that you'd actually be affected by it is if you forgot to charge up the Joy-Con controllers in between your play sessions.
Now, shall I swoop in here with some tech nerdery?
Oh dear, this is gonna
now happen. Yeah, I recently picked up, because I browse on, you know, regular listeners will know I am a massive nerd who, you know, imports little techie things from China and then plays about with them and sees what he can do. I recently bought some battery chargers, which can, you know, they're tiny. They, you know, they've got a micro USB, as in, you know, your standard phone charger that now everyone you know, uses.
USB type C, as it were.
Well, or, you know, the micro USB.
Yeah.
But, you know, the, you know, everyone's got cables, you know, coming out, you know, their eyes, you know, that type.
Yeah.
And you're probably for, you know, phone chargers or, you know, anything like that, you know, so... The idea is, you know, you get a small board, you've got the necessary circuitry on there to accept a 5-volt signal, and it will then charge a lithium-ion battery off that, and it will regulate it, and it will let you know how, you know, when it's reached maximum charge and then cut off charging. So in other words, you know, everything there that you need to charge your battery. Yeah. How much did it cost?
What, the cables or the batteries or what?
The actual battery charger, which does the important charging, you know, accepts the output, you know, input charge, lowers it, charges the battery, checks to see if the battery is charging, you know, how fast it's charged. When it charges, it stops that so it doesn't, you know, overcharge.
£2.50.
I would imagine it would actually depend on the quality of the build itself. I mean, if you're kind of sticking with stuff from China that have been, you know, kind of... Not necessarily knocked off, but badly made. Then
shall we guess where the Switch is? Shall we take a wild stab at that?
Okay, go for it.
That'll be China. But right, so the, you know, these, you know, battery charger circuitries, which can, you know, charge more than one battery, cost me 15 pence.
Heck.
Okay.
So, and that's, to me, an end, you know, an end user to get them delivered from China. Now, I'm pretty sure Nintendo might be able to knock off maybe tuppence of that price by saying that, you know, we'll buy a million. So for the sake of a few pence, they could put charging circuitry in that, which could then route to the controllers and charge them. And all you'd have to do is, you know, you put the, the Joy-Con and what, you know, thing is, you know, controller bits plugged in. So, you know, use it as a controller, you know, obviously as they're, you know, presenting it as, and then just plug in a cable that everyone owns, and there it would be charging, and it would charge those. So, yeah, you're looking at, I'll be really generous and say it would add 50 pence.
50 pence per unit sold.
Yeah. And that's in a, I'm giving them a massive markup and presuming that in a, it would require more than that, although I honestly, hand on heart, cannot see how it would. So, yeah, you're looking at less than a dollar easily to add charging circuitry to something like that.
And no doubt the second wave of switches sold probably will be, you know, with that.
Yeah, I can't see how it wouldn't be, because I just find it so mystifying, because it presume, do they offer a charging version of the Geocon plug-in thing?
Every separate one. If you mean in the actual kind of controller thing that will slot into. Yeah, all of the standalone ones that you buy separately will have that.
I can only think that there must be some, you know, massive bulk order thing going on where they need to trim a little bit off, because otherwise it seems to me it would cost them more to make two separate versions instead of just, you know, adding in charge circuitry. Because I've got the thing with the charge circuitry, I mean, I'm giving that example of, you know, this is something which will charge a lithium-ion battery. Everyone uses lithium-ion batteries. The Switch will use lithium-ion. I will be staggered to hell if the little slot off, you know, controllers don't. So, you know, they're all using it. It's such a common technology, that's why it's so bloody cheap. It's just in everything. Bluetooth speakers, you know, that you charge up.
Yeah.
Anything like that is going to have something like this in. So it's pennies. It's literal pennies to have circuitry like this. I can't quite work out why they've said, oh no, the one that you get, it's basically just hold them together.
Okay.
You know, have a few lights on. And, you know, oh no, you'll have to pay out, was it $80 or something like that?
Oh, that's for the Joy-Cons themselves.
Yeah, $79.99, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which, yes, expensive, but by the same token, they do count as two controllers by themselves.
Okay. You're being very generous there, sir.
I want to.
Do you not think that they count as two controllers?
Let's see how many games would actually use them as that and how many people would just...
Yeah, but there's a difference between, you know, games that use them like that and, you know, them actually being usable as, you know, two separate controls, considering their functionality.
Gentlemen, I would like to read out tweets from the community and then move us on. Thank you very much. When asked about what do people think about the Switch after the shizzle was on the other day, JP Bradley tweeted at us, a little pricier than I expected, but not significantly. The issue is, as ever, a lack of launch titles and costly peripherals. Richard Whitehouse tweeted, still undecided, want to try one out first, however, that Mario game looks ace. Chris Jacobs...
Super Mario Sonic 2006.
Chris Jacobs tweeted in reply to JP Bradley and at us this in regards to it being a little pricier than they were expecting and all that.
Yeah.
And then Steve, who is actually one of my work colleagues, tweeted at me, looks like a good pickup for non-Wii U owners. Would probably struggle to justify it if I owned a Wii U. killer apps for me are Zelda and MK8. Both also Wii U titles. Would need a little more if I already had the means to play them.
Can I just say that I have been researching, and I've not actually seen this information published anywhere else, but I went on the Nintendo website, and, you know, they list all the games, and there's like a load of blank spaces below, and I kind of looked on the links between each, and yes, they're for stuff like Mario Kart 8 and whatnot. So, you know, I went on the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe one, and I looked down, and it did actually say 8 players LAN. You can play 8 player Mario Kart 8.
Yeah.
Which does actually sound pretty cool.
Oh,
that would be cool, yeah.
But that, I don't think I've heard anywhere else kind of say about that yet.
If only Nintendo had some kind of event that they could have imparted information.
Yeah, but I mean, they've still got, you know, an entire, 2 months? Under before their launch?
They can knock out a few more games in that time.
Okay, we are moving on to what people have been up to. So,
can I just say on Mario Kart 8?
Quick.
Yep. As I haven't said much.
Go for it.
I don't like the fact that they've put this new mode on where you can't fall off the bloody track.
Hey, what?
There's now a track assist.
I think that's
mode.
An optional one. That is definitely optional. Yeah, I think it's for beginner players and people that are struggling at 200cc.
Also, I really don't like the fact that they've got this new 2 weapons thing that you can cycle through.
Wait, it's quite double dash.
You're going to have 2 pickups, and you can actually cycle which one you use first.
Is it my imagination, or could you already do that?
No, you could do that with double dash.
If you're a proper player, you can press the shoulder button and hold the shell or something behind you, can't you?
If you're a proper player.
Yeah. Well, you could kind of deploy it, couldn't you? So if you had shells,
behind you.
To say, right, you know, chuck that out behind me.
Which added some tactics to it, but now they've made it even easier. They've given you, you've got 2 slots.
Say it's even easier. I mean, technically it's not really necessarily easier. It's just giving you more options.
And we're moving on. Moving on.
Can I just jump in really quickly here? Very quickly.
Extremely quickly.
I just saw it. It was, you know, just before we came on air, so people are, you know, free to go and have a look themselves. But Digital Foundry had a go on Splatoon 2 and Mario Kart 8, and they were talking about some of the differences that they noticed. Namely, that... I think they said that Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U wasn't 1080p. Was it 720p, or was it, you know, some weird resolution?
It was 720p, I think.
Yeah. Well, they've said the Switch version, when it's output into a TV, is full 1080p at 60 frames.
Ooh, that's good.
So that's quite nice. Also, the saying was Splatoon, that seems to, you know, offer the same kind of thing, where you're getting a bump in resolution.
Cool.
Running at, you know, 60 frames. And they both run at 60 frames per second, you know, on its own screen, on the Switch's screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going for, you know, that kind of, you know, parity. So, you know, parity in frame rate, obviously not in resolution because the, you know, the handheld screen is, you know, is lower. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, we're moving on.
If you guys could see how annoyed Emily is right now.
We've only got 15 minutes left to record because people have to bugger off. So I'm going to go first into what I've been up to.
Supernatural.
No. There's been less supernatural viewing this week. I actually, through the means of Dave Internet, I watched Eyewitness. Which has been over. I wanted to watch it legitimately, but could I find the means to pay for it in the United Kingdom? No. And I saw no sign of anyone in the UK picking it up.
Wait. Do you mean that Dave Internet is not legitimate?
Sadly not.
What?
He's blind to me. That is completely legit.
So,
he said it's too legit to quit.
I'll put it this way, though. The series, I watched through all 10 episodes, and it was so good that if it actually manages to make it its way onto flipping disc over here, I will happily buy it. Quite happily.
And that's the approach I take. If I have to watch something through a shadier, in a non-direct way, indirect.
What are you saying about Dave Internet?
I'm saying he's completely fine.
But,
that's what I'm saying.
But anyway,
but I will happily buy something later.
Yeah. But yeah, Eyewitness was actually really good. One of the reasons was because it was looking interesting, and lots of people I follow on Tumblr were posting about it, and it was getting to the situation of it's getting dangerous on the spoilers front, and this looks like something like I'd like to watch. I'm gonna have to watch it. Watched it. I would, but I find it interesting that the, because it's been quite popular in the US, that there's no sign, because it's USA that's shown it over there, so they don't have any exclusivity deals as far as I'm aware with anyone over here, but I haven't seen any sign of any UK, you know, sort of like broadcasters or online offerings, offering obviously to take the show on to show it over here. Which is a shame, because it's actually quite good. It's actually an adaptation of a, I think, Scandinavian series. So that's pretty good. But yeah, it's about, it's set in Poughkeepsie. Is it, how do you pronounce it?
Poughkeepsie.
Thank you. Yes. You know, and
you go very quiet on our end, Emily.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that it was actually quite good. It is literally about an eyewitness, actually, maybe, yeah, two of them, actually. It's an interesting tale. I don't want to really spoil it, because obviously it's not really over here, and it might properly come over here. But it's definitely worth watching. And, okay, so aside from Eyewitness, also, yes, I have watched some Supernatural. Supernatural isn't back from hiatus yet, but I essentially rewatched episode 2 of season 12.
You're rewatching them, Emily, even though you've already seen them.
Yeah, it's because I like tweeting along with people when I can legitimately tweet along with people. As to
I noticed.
It. Yeah, that was an interesting episode filled with lots of drama. And there were much protests on the Twitters for much of the episode because of what happened to Sam in that episode.
Oh, was he killed off and found in a bathtub?
No, but he was technically...
why I'm sore about that.
He was technically sexually assaulted, though. For which I would like to point out, spoilers... doesn't really get addressed through the rest of the season so far. There we go.
Okay, so, yeah, nothing serious then.
No.
Oh.
So, yeah, so that's Supernatural. And then, I suppose... Oh, right. So, we've been watching Luke Cage. That finally happened.
Blimey!
Hey!
Are we on, what, episode 5?
We've just finished episode 5.
Yeah, okay. So we've just finished episode 5 today. Been watching that whilst I've been on my bike. So yeah, that was cool. And then there was just that little thing called the Sherlock finale, which, who's seen it?
Yes,
I have not.
I feel like I was on drugs all the way through it, but yes, I watched it.
I'm just kind of like, whatever at this point, Michelle. It wasn't as interesting. I found the opening of the season more interesting than the special they did last year, but then the season as a whole, I haven't found it that amusing, and I just feel like it's lost a certain something since the initial two seasons.
I've seen various reaction to it. Like, The Poke said that a missing persons case has been started after the Sherlock scriptwriter disappeared up their own backside.
It was rather indulgent in ways to the characters that wasn't actually as exciting as it could be.
I saw lots of people say, you know, watch... what's the Yankee version called?
Elementary, which is really good.
Yes. Lots of people were reacting to the finale of this series of you know, Sherlock and the Beeb with, go watch Elementary, it's quite good.
I still prefer Sherlock, but Elementary is really good. It's got quite a nice dynamic between Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu, who's Watson.
I had no idea what his name was. He's Sick Boy from Trainspotting.
Trainspotting, yeah. Yeah. But he's good as Sherlock.
Yeah, so... Oh, and I want to point out that I somehow managed to wind up watching a couple more episodes of Good Witch, because... apparently, I like torturing myself on my exercise bike, both physically and psychologically. It's become my go-to trashy TV at the moment. I think we should be all fine for the fact that I haven't fallen so far as to have reality TV as my go-to trashy TV.
Exactly. I have to keep rethinking whenever you say that, because they used to be the Good Witch on CB, CITV.
Yeah, this is definitely not. This is proper Hallmark. Yeah.
No, Worst Witch was on CBeebies, but there was
Witch was on CITV back in the day. It was a CITV series.
It's all bollocks unless it was Inspector Gadget or Ulysses 30.
Anyway, other than playing a bit of Bioshock for episodeness or whenever we get round to it, that's also the first game I've played in a while, and that's what I've been up to. We really have to go quick, guys. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties we had a minute ago, but...
Metroid!
Hello!
Go!
I have been playing about with my Raspberry Pi again. I've got not much progress with that. I've just been soldering a few things. Got a few more things through the post that will eventually find their way into a project. But I've kind of slowed down on the browsing AliExpress at 2 o'clock in the morning while I'm sitting on the toilet going, that's cheap for that. I'm sure I'll find a use for it. Ordering it and then finding it in the post in about 2 months' time going, why did I order one of those? That's not even something I wanted. But yeah, so a tiny bit of progress with that, but I've stopped playing about with the Orange Pi Zero at the moment because the wall I was coming up against with that was the version of Ambien and such that I was running, which is the version of Debian and such. It wasn't quite running 100% fully, so it didn't have Wi-Fi. I couldn't get the sound at full volume or working and everything, all those kinds of things. But someone who works on the Retro Orange Pi, which is the version of Retro Pi for the Orange Pi, has had one donated and they're getting it working. So it's like, fine, I have no idea what I'm doing. I am, the dog in the lab coat when it comes to, weird exotic hardware with, Linuxes and, getting stuff working on it. So it's like, I'm fine. You just go ahead and do that. I'll have fun with it when you've finished. So doing that. Did I mention last time that we'd watched Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2?
I think you did, yes.
Yeah, I thought I had, yeah. But yes, everyone should go and watch that. We started watching Van Helsing on Netflix.
Oh yeah, the sci-fi one with the
it's quite low budget at the moment, and people have a habit of hoarding the idiot ball, as the term is. I think it comes from drama group. That old thing of you hold the idiot ball, you will be an idiot in this episode.
Okay.
And one of the last episodes, there is a volcanic eruption in Yellowstone or wherever. It releases something into the air and it turns people into vampires.
Right.
And the series is set 3 years after this has happened, where the titular Van Helsing, or Vanessa Van Helsing in this, wakes up, and it turns out that her blood can kind of cure the vampirism.
Okay.
So there's a whole thing going along with slightly different versions of vampires. Like there's the we're vampires in the Buffy sense, where we're perfectly cognizant, but we're evil.
Okay.
There are vampires that are more feral, and there are looks in one of the more recent ones, there are vampires that are just completely feral, and the other vampires stay the fuck away from them.
So,
it's very low rent. I think the most recent episode was directed by Amanda Tapping or Samantha Carter from that there SG-1, Stargate SG-1. So it seems like it's a Canadian, sci-fi series, done mm-hmm. on a you know, low budget, but it's kind of nice to have a post-apocalyptic, especially with Trump inauguration this week. Thumbs up. you know, series with a female lead.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of been watching that, but to give an example of, you know, the, you know, the sort of idiot thing, one of the episodes we just watched had a teenage girl and a preteen girl, sisters or friends, I don't know, but they go into the part of the hospital where they're holed up in, and it's got keep out, danger, you know, come in here and you will be decapitated, you know, kind of signs all over the place. And they say, it's probably got food in. And then one of the short young girl tries to open the door and a giant blade pops up, you know, and it would have decapitated the, you know, the older girl. And, you know, the older girl gets all angry about this and blah, 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 and say, you tried to kill, you know, my friend. And it's just, no, you went into a room that had keep out and danger written on the signs. And on the doors and on the walls. There was a reason. You're an idiot. But yeah, it seems all right, and it's, you know, it's passing the time. It definitely has an arc. The, you know, the episodes are, you know, one in it, they're one continuous arc rather than it being, you know, 100% episodic. So it suits the sort of Netflix binge watching. So if you go into it knowing that you're going to get, you know, low rent, low budget of, you know, series with, you know, not exactly brilliant writing, if you know what I mean, it's perfectly watchable. So, you know, we're working our way through that, and then we'll eventually get to watching Sherlock and see exactly what people have been complaining about.
Okay, cookie.
Cool. Well, Sherlock, which I did enjoy. There was a very few weird bits in it which didn't seem to gel, but I still enjoyed it. And I've been reading Batman Zero Year by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, which is part of the New 52, which is quite good. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo breathing new life into the Batman character, starting from scratch, and it's their first time he comes up against the Riddler, who is a lot more dangerous in their version than ever before, which has been quite interesting.
Hmm.
And that's it.
Okay. Excellent.
Hey.
Is what everything I said what you've been up to as well?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much that.
So you haven't been victimised by the Good Witch, or you haven't self-victimised yourself with the Good Witch? So you've got that advantage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could just stick a fork in your kneecap while you're, you know, cycling.
Whilst I'm cycling, it really,
yeah,
really sort of make it hard for myself. Okay.
Yeah. Instead of watching that.
Oh, one cool thing that we got coming this week is that we're going to Mark Kermode's leading another film screening at our local cinema, and the director's going to be there. It's is it Moon?
Cool.
It's Thingy's Bowie's son, who's
yes,
the director.
Thingy Jones.
Yes. It begins with D. D.
David?
David Jones? I feel like that's why. Yeah.
No, that was Bowie's actual name.
Yeah. Well,
David.
We will report on that next week, how that went.
Cool. How does that happen, by the way? Does Kermo live down there? Or?
He's either got a second home down here, or very generous friends, or they just like renting a particular holiday cottage or something. Because the whole family comes down normally. And they're usually stalking around Truro during the day and stuff. And then sort of like come to the cinema in the evening to obviously do the whole thing.
I mean, that is kind of nice. I can't think of anything that's, you know, happened up here that's, you know, like that. I think we got an episode of Get Fresh filmed up here in the 80s in front of the castle.
I mean, the advantage of our local cinema is that it's part of a small independent chain. That's,
and they do have a, what is it, 35mm projector.
Yeah, because it's a whole thing. It's part of it is that it's for 35mm screenings that they can normally present.
Keep them alive.
That whole sort of thing. Anyway, that is all we've got time for this week. You can find notes for this episode over at... Oh, wait, we haven't said bye. Does anyone want to say bye first? Should we say bye?
Bye.
Yeah, we usually say bye, don't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, so it's good night from...
Good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, aka one-armed underscore cookie on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. This episode is also available on Stitcher and iTunes and apparently Pocket Casts, as I found out today.
All the RSS.
If you want to email us, you can now, it seems, via contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Night.
Bye.
Click
the switch. Or not.